okay, so I'm just doing a quick interview. Okay, so I'm here with George Saunders. George, I've been actually asking people what the future of books is because it's looking pretty grim, and you're a pretty hopeful guy, so what are your thoughts on this?
I think it's the same as it ever was, actually. I really,
really?
Do. Yeah, I don't think it, I mean, maybe the format will change, but I don't think so. I think there's something, somebody figured it out right with books in the first place, and they're kind of, so I'm not worried about it, really, Plus, I'll be dead by then, so it doesn't really matter.
But. So it helps to actually, because I saw Will Self talk with Martin Amis, and he was convinced that books were going to be gone in, 20 or 30 years.
Yeah.
It's going to die out with a generation. So I guess it's a matter of finding interest like literature and sticking with it to match your lifespan.
Yeah, and I think too that the desire to, to read is it's deeply hardwired. So I'm sure it'll change, the way we receive music has changed so much, but still the basic need is there. So that's kind of cool. As long as you don't cling to the current form of delivery or the current tone of delivery or whatever, it's no problem. I think as long as people are in life and they see how confusing it is and how powerful and how ambiguous, I think they'll always turn to something like storytelling to get, to feel like they're getting out of the mess a little bit.
Have you made any efforts to try to meet up with Pynchon in any way?
To meet up with Pynchon?
Yeah, to meet him. Has he reached out to you? Have you reached out to him?
No,
is there some sort of secret society?
No, I've never met him.
You've never met him?
No, but I would love to because he gave me a blurb for my first book, and it was such a huge thing for him to do. So, I don't know. But
he gives you the blurb to fend you off in the future.
Yeah, that's right. Then you never, don't come around his house as much. But he's, you feel like you know him through his work, and I kind of admire his reclusiveness. I can understand it because if you're really about writing, then a lot of this other stuff is kind of, it's a fun, and I think it's useful, and it's a good way to communicate with readers and so on, but at some level, you're kind of dissipating energy, and I guess in the perfect world, you'd finish one book and start another, and there would be no, so he's got that right.
To give you some sports talk here, you're considered one of the front runners, and so,
there's only five people, so I guess everybody.
Yeah, 20% chance, possibly more.
I think probably a 17% chance.
Oh, okay. Yeah. 17?
Yeah, yeah.
How did you, what accounts for that 3%?
I'm a little worse than the rest, so it's a little less. It's fine. No, it's it's a fun thing. I never have even been to this dinner before, and it's pretty wild.
Oh yeah, so this is your first time you've actually been at the National Book Awards.
Yeah. So it's really fun,
What do you think your presence at the National Book Awards does for literature, aside from them giving you an award?
I don't know. I think it's charitable. I don't know. I think well, it does something for me. It makes me feel really happy and kind of, it's a weird thing, actually, in a profession that's as kind of vulnerable as this. And it's a hard thing to talk about, but if you feel respected, it actually helps you work better, at least me.
You need respect.
I think a little bit. I think to be noticed and to be have people perceive you positively can, if you have a certain psychological type, it can actually help you stand up a little straighter and do work that maybe you couldn't otherwise do, So.
But when you're writing those early stories and you're writing those early books, you don't have anyone necessarily aside from friends and loved ones to actually give you that respect.
Right.
So what do you do if you don't have any of that? The Rodney Dangerfield of literature in the very beginning.
Well, I think everybody is, actually, and it's a very rickety time. I think that's almost a thing that you have to privatize, if that's a word, and figure it out for yourself. But I when I was at that point in my career, I was really drunk in this bar in Chicago, and it was a kind of a faux Irish bar, and I was kind of stumbling to the bathroom, and there was this cardboard cutout of some dude that I later realized was James Joyce, and they had one of those cartoon balloons, and it said, "Silence, exile, and cunning," and I thought, wow, it was so profound, but I think those years are about that. You have to be a little quiet until you get it right. You got to be happy to be in exile because nobody knows you, and you have to be cunning because in your heart of hearts you're saying, all right, I'm going to find a way to make something beautiful.
All right, so here's a question. If you read Ulysses and you can reconstruct Dublin from the bricks that he laid down, what do we reconstruct from reading the work of George Saunders?
I don't think anything like that. It's a city you probably don't want to go to.
No, I think maybe, I don't think, I think even with Dublin, I would say, with Ulysses, you're not really reconstructing this city, but you're reconstructing Joyce's heart or his view, and I think that's what you get. Now, in my case, like I say, you might not want to spend much time there, but you are, it's always this, you're making a compressed, exaggerated, personalized view of the world, and then putting it out there. And for some reason, it's interesting for people to read other people's compressed, exaggerated visions of the world. So I don't know what you'd see there, but it'd be shorter, that's for sure.
Okay. Yeah. Well, cool. Thanks, George. Thanks very much.
Great to see you again.
Yeah.